Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. To us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, man.
You know today's show topic, right?
Yeah.
Meat.
Meat.
Or it's all on meat. We have coming up...
Meat, it's what for dinner?
coming up after the break, a woman who started a journal, it's a literary journal really, called Meat Paper, Your Journal of Meat Culture. Can't wait to talk about it because, you know, meat is an important part of my culture.
It is part of my culture as well, although the magazine was a little bit gross.
I was out recently, and I had the little baby lamb chops were coming around on the hors d'oeuvre tray.
I adore those.
And I refer to those as meatsicles. I really do like them a lot. But I had an interesting evening the other night. I went to
God gave them their own little sticks from which to carry them.
It's true. I went. I think he meant them to hold up the animal, those sticks, but we use them to hold our little meat to eat.
I don't know, it's working.
I had a wonderful meal the other night. A gentleman's going to come on the show next week named Paul Greco. Paul was the wine buyer at Gramercy Tavern. After that, he opened with Marco Canora, his chef partner, who was from Kraft. He opened Hearth Restaurant, one of our favorite restaurants on the east side of New York. If you're coming from out of town, you got to go. And he opened another restaurant just recently, April of this year, called Insieme.
Mm-hmm. And it's getting a lot of critical acclaim. Really, everybody's talking about it.
I've been there twice, and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. He's opening a new wine bar coming this spring next to Hearth, which should be interesting. But we'll talk to him next week about that. I have to say, though, I was at a fundraiser, political fundraiser. I was a guest. I was a tag-along. Mm-hmm. But it was a sort of a high-end fundraiser at the St. Regis Hotel. Now, if you're not from around New York, the St. Regis is a pretty hoity-toity hotel.
Yeah, okay? Alain Ducasse's new restaurant just opening.
Really? I was unaware of that.
Yeah, Alain Ducasse is opening a new restaurant this week, I think.
Well,
St. Regis.
We weren't there. We were in one of their grand ballrooms. And I have to say, what I do love about hotels is certain things are constant. High, low, whatever. The pigs in a blanket came around. And my guilty pleasure, I love them. And I only got like two of them, and then the senator who was the fundraiser for started speaking, and I thought, darn it!
Seriously, what's better than pigs in a blanket? Salty, sweet, you have crunchy bread on the outside, warm, the whole thing is warm all the way through. In college, and you don't know this about me, but I will tell you, it is also my guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
But in college, I would take the little Pillsbury croissants or whatever.
I vaguely recall this.
And make little pigs in the blanket with them. Except what I would do, just because I was decadent, even then, even making pigs in a blanket as an 18-year-old in a dorm room,
yeah.
I'd put a little piece of aged cheddar cheese underneath the little blanket and bake the aged cheddar cheese into the little pig in the blanket with it.
I vaguely recall that.
It was pretty delicious. I cannot tell a lie.
You know, I recall that I discovered that about you after a couple of beers in college, and it was pretty good. But you know what's funny is we were at the fundraiser in the St. Regis, which is a beautiful hotel and a beautiful room. The service was very nice and very elegant, and we got to thinking about going to Insieme afterwards, you know, and I just thought it was so different how... Look, and there's great food, and especially with Ducasse going to be at the St. Regis, but there's also some, you know, there's sometimes the hotel food just is hotel food, you know, and they had a platter.
It's very different to cook for 500, 1,000, 2,000 people all at once as it is to cook two meals at a time.
Well,
it's a very different experience.
But also there are times, I think, still in our culture where food just doesn't matter. On the super high end, I mean, this was not an inexpensive thing to attend. Now, obviously, most of the money is going to the candidate, but I'm sure the hotel was handsomely rewarded for their efforts.
Sure, for running the fundraiser.
But then we went down to Insieme, which... is a casual place. There are no tablecloths on the table. It's elegant and casual at the same time, which is sort of the
we're seeing more and more of that for sure.
But you know, very nice placemats and stainless steel flatware. Like we have stainless steel in Catherine Lombardi, but we have silver in Stage Left. But stainless steel, dressed up a little bit, and the food, I will tell you, was incredible, and the wine was incredible, and the service was perfect. But I think that in a different time, that was reserved for places like the St. Regis Hotel, and that was where... And this is Marco Cunar and Paul Greco have started there. Now they're on their second restaurants with a wine bar after, but this is their individual project, and it's just about the food.
Well, more and more, I think we're seeing it. You know, everybody sends us their trends for 2008 or their trends, what was the trend in 2007. But more and more, what we see, Francis and I, when we go out, and I'm sure you're seeing it as well, is more and more you're seeing people be able to find extraordinary dining experiences in less fanciful places, in places that are, you know, well kept, that are pretty, that are well adorned, but the focus is more on the table. The focus is more on what's going on with the food than necessarily with the place.
And I also think there is a bit of a disconnect with, you know, that event needed to have a table laid out with certain kinds of stuff, certain kind of antipasti and the pigs in a blanket that went around. And by the way, I enjoyed the pigs in the blanket. I'm not mocking them. But, you know, I'm looking at this in my own wedding because we're looking at a wedding on I'm planning a wedding now, which is an unusual thing. I mean, I planned other people's weddings before, but I'm planning my own now. And what I look
and
at...
And trying to stay away from all the things that we do just because they're trite and just because they're traditional, to do things because they're meaningful.
And I am also looking at, you know, what did Jennifer and I want? We want to have a great party. We've got a great Irish band. We've got a great jazz band. And we're going to do it on a friend's farm. And after the wedding, what we decided to do is we're going to put out, because it's 300 people, and I don't want to have the more than, you know, 20 people there serving us, you know.
Right.
And
I don't want people fawning all over you and being in the way.
But I want great food.
Right.
So you helped me come up with this idea. Yeah. We're going to have great roasted chickens out there cold. We're going to have a great salumi. We're going to have great cheese.
Charcuteries.
We're going to have charcuterie and pate and sides of beans and all sorts of stuff and potatoes and it's all going to be cold. And
not a picnic, okay? Because that's not really the
kind of a picnic, but
on that same.
And there's going to be bottles of country wine and wines made by friends of ours, you know, on the tables. And help yourself. And if you'd like someone to wait on you, try the Smith wedding. It's down the street. Maybe someone will wait on you there, but it ain't happening. Actually, there's going to be someone there to wait on my mom who doesn't get around so good. But, you know, I'm paying them separately. But, you know, I think there's more and more of a move to that, and I like it.
Yeah,
you know,
it is a fun and interesting trend. But still, there for me, there will always be a place, and obviously Stage Left is that kind of a place, there will always be a place for the kind of restaurant where you go to celebrate a birthday, an anniversary.
But here's my point. It's not just about celebration, because people come to Stage Left. We have customers who come every week. But Stage Left starts with the food. We start with amazing food,
and we build
stuff up around it. What I'm saying about these hotel places in the past...
They start with the stuff.
They start with the stuff, and then they sort of throw the food in. And that, I think, is something of the past.
It is. That's fading into oblivion.
You know,
no question about it.
You know, but if you don't start with the food and the service, and especially, and it's not there on the plate, the other stuff seems kind of stupid. You know, it just seems kind of like, why are you doing
right,
that?
Why do I have a solid silver fork to eat my pigs in a blanket with?
Sell two of those chandeliers and make me some good food. All right, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. 1450 WCTC. It's 1115. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis, Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And today we're talking with the co-founder and co-editor of an interesting new magazine in its first issue in the fall of 2007 called Meat Paper, the Journal of Meat Culture.
Amy Standen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, great to be here.
Meat Paper, hey, Amy?
Yes.
There's a lot of pictures of meat in here.
There are a lot of pictures of meat in there.
And it's almost all raw meat, too.
There's actually a picture of a woman wearing a dress made out of meat in here.
And probably no other picture that we've published has gotten quite the reaction that that one has. Which is sort of funny, because that image was taken in 1994, maybe. You know, this isn't even the cutting edge of meat art, but, yeah, it's pretty shocking.
Well, you know, most people aren't even aware that there is such thing as meat art. Amy, I have to say, was the reaction mostly, what the heck is wrong with these people?
these people who would wear meat on their bodies?
No, I think this is interesting. Now, this isn't like a butcher's trade publication. Yep. This is a paper on meat, but there's not a recipe collection. Why don't you talk to us about the purpose of the journal and the cultural commentary involved herein?
Sure. Well, meat paper came about because Sasha and I started to notice this thing that we've called the Fleischgeist. And the Fleischgeist refers to this explosion of interest in meat that we've seen just all over the place. You know, there's so many chefs making their own salumi. There's people doing these head-to-tail, you know, eating every parts of the pig. There's new interest in offal, which are the sort of nasty bits of animals. People are eating those for the first time in decades. In mainstream restaurants. And there's also a profusion of artists who are using meat in their work. And I think that all of those things are connected. And what it has to do with is the fact that meat is really a very rich metaphor and very sort of troubling and also very attractive and very desirable, also kind of gross. It's something that no one is neutral on. And so our magazine came about because we wanted to find a place where we could explore all of these reactions to this one thing, which is meat.
I think for most Americans, there's a real disconnect between the meat that's on their plate and an animal.
Yes.
Are you trying to remake that connection?
We're certainly not the only ones trying to remake that connection, but it's a connection that's really interesting to me. I mean, I think it's a connection that's important because shouldn't we know what we're eating? And once we start being more aware of what we're eating and where it comes from, we do start to change the way we eat a little bit. You know, Meat Paper, we're editors of this. We're not trying to toe any particular line about how people should eat or what they should eat. But I do think that there is a value in learning more about where meat comes from. But I also think philosophically it's a really interesting question, and there are people who have written in very interesting ways about that disconnect that you mentioned. You know, how is it that we are really sort of, we don't want to go inside a slaughterhouse. None of us, few of us have had that experience, few of us would want that experience, and yet we eat meat often. And that is a sort of psychological leap that is really interesting once you start looking at it.
Well, Jamie Oliver just butchered or killed a chicken on television in England. And, you know, there's an uproar about people seeing a chicken actually being killed.
No uproar about the McNuggets on the corner, though.
But,
right,
people seeing a chicken being killed in on television, how that's so wrong. Yet not every person, but 95% of Americans would eat that chicken without thinking twice about it. I
thought that was fascinating.
I just find it bizarre.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and some of that outcry came from vegetarians, as I understand, who said, you've turned the killing of a chicken into a spectacle. You know, it's one thing to do it sort of in private, you know, in the dignity of a slaughterhouse, which is...
dubious at best.
You know, it's another thing to turn it into a TV show and make money off of it. There were just I think what we saw in that instance, and this has happened before, is that there is just a visceral reaction to seeing animals killed that is really troubling for people.
Well, there's a connection. There's an inescapable connection between meat and death. And, you know, I think that on the one hand, if I were PETA, and we're critical of PETA for many reasons, including that they're disingenuous. And PETA will often grab a part of an issue and say, well, I'm against this sort of meat, or isn't that sort of meat wrong, when PETA's ultimate goal is that that meat be prohibited. However, I would think that if I were, you know, on the PETA side of things and I wanted to create a little bit of moral outrage, I would want people to see that, because I think there's a certain number of people who said, that's it, I'm never eating meat again. What I want people to see is, okay, well, that's what meat is, and if you choose to eat it, then realize that there's a part of it. And I think that's unquestionably good to restore that connection. What are your thoughts on that?
I completely agree. I don't know what their stance to what Jamie Oliver did was. I don't know what side they took, but yeah, it seems to me that if you're gonna, you know, if people are gonna eat chickens, we should be able to see and live with the act of a chicken dying. I can't see really what's wrong with that.
I also think it's okay for it to bother you a little bit.
I think it would be odd if it didn't bother you a little bit. I mean, on the other hand, I know people, there's a sort of rise of this urban farming movement. I was talking to someone the other day who raises chickens, and pigs and turkeys in the backyard of her, you know, Oakland apartment building. And she slaughters these animals herself, and she talked about how troubling it was, but she also talked about, you know, you do get used to it. And people who grew up on farms and kill animals often do get used to it.
Well, and we're going to have to take a quick break, Amy, but we're going to put your neighbor's address on up on our website, so that if you're looking for an apartment out there, you can avoid that particular neighborhood. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Captain Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Amy Standen. She is the co-founder and co-editor of Meat Paper, your journal of meat culture. You can find out how to get your copy and more about it if you go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com. It's really, I think, kind of a literary magazine with meat at the center of it. But we were talking about making the connection between meat and death, and it's there. And, you know, Mark and I get criticized from both sides. PETA hates us because we're for the killing of animals of any sort, and corporate agribusiness hates us because we're for the humane killing of animals, if there is such a thing, and we believe there is. But I think that what's so shocking about the disconnect between seeing animals killed and meat in our culture is related to the disconnect with death. We don't want to see death. We don't want to see the consequences of things. We eternally are looking for the creams and lotions that make us more youthful. We're uncomfortable with death as a society. Whereas in maybe the Mexican community that Ken Rubin writes about in your recent article, they're more closely connected with death, and they honor the animal as it's killed.
Mm-hmm. And in eating meat, I think actually that's something you find in a lot of cultures, that the act of eating meat includes a recognition of the fact that we are ourselves meat and one day we'll die and be not really all that dissimilar to the piece of meat that's sitting on the table.
But I think you find it in cultures where killing the animal is done
closer to home,
yes, precisely.
Exactly. Well,
and
yeah,
in a way that, you know, we talk about Jamie Oliver killing a chicken on TV, of all the benign things to kill a chicken. But in a Mexican village where the goat is killed, the children would watch that because mm-hmm. that's a part. Because I think the children almost deserve to see that as a part of. If meat is a part of your culture, then the killing of animals should be recognized and dealt with, and maybe we'd be a little more respectful of our food and ourselves. If we knew where that meat came from. Is that your impression as
yeah.
well, Amy?
I see that too, yeah.
All right, well, we're going to go and listen to the news, but when we come back, we're going to talk more with Amy Standen about her journal of meat called The Meat Paper. It's the Journal of Meat Culture. You can find out how to grab your copy on restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Amy Standen about her brand new publication, Meat Paper, the Journal of Meat Culture.
Amy, recently it's been put out there that you no longer enjoy meat. You don't eat meat anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you're writing a publication called Meat Paper. Are you just mocking us?
I'm just here to make life difficult for you. Exactly. No, I mean it. I think if I was not the editor of Meat Paper, I might have stuck with my carnivorous ways a little longer. But it got to the point where I realized that, you know, one of us had to represent that side of it. We've always felt that vegetarianism, veganism, and carnivorism, even the most ardent carnivorism, are all responses to the same thing, and that is meat. And so Meat Paper is a magazine that is for all of these people. And actually, most of our contributors, for whatever reason, have been vegetarians, even though they aren't necessarily writing about vegetarian subjects. So it started to seem like, you know what, if we're going to, you know, talk the talk, I'm going to have to walk the walk. And so I decided as of 2008 to become a vegetarian myself. And so far, luckily, there are many delicious vegetarian fake meat products on the market, and I've been quite happy.
Were you a vegetarian prior to, at any point in your life, prior
yes,
to starting
Sasha vegetarian? And I, just coincidentally, long before we ever even met, both spent long periods of time being vegetarian. I was a vegetarian for about 7 years. I think during the, you know, high school and college, which are glory days for many temporary vegetarians. So both of us were vegetarians through some part of that stage of life, and then changed our minds at some point. And I've been eating meat for, you know, I won't do the math, but for many years since then, until I went back recently.
I think one of the interesting things that you write about is the crossover meat. I remember I went out on a couple of dates with a woman who described herself, and I love this, and I always remember that she said, "Do you not eat meat?" And she said, "Well, I'm a bako vegetarian."
Yes. I've never heard the term for it, but of course that doesn't surprise me at all.
No, I'm a bako vegetarian. I said, "What the heck is a bako vegetarian?" She said, "I don't eat meat except for bacon. I can't give it up. I can't stop." And she'd been that way for like 20 years.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh,
she'd
wow.
been a bako vegetarian since
that
she was like
strange.
12 years old. So, but you sort of discussed the allure of bacon as the crossover
bacon
meat.
Bacon is the crossover meat, and I will stand by that.
It starts with beer, then you smoke pot, then you have
exactly.
pork, and then,
it's
you know,
the
it's,
gateway.
It's yes. reefer madness. It's the gateway
before
drug.
Before you know it, you're eating, you know, boiled brain
yeah.
and
so
liver.
Why do you think that is?
And I don't know, because bacon has to be one of the grosser meats in a way. I mean, it's, you know, it's very graphic. It's really greasy. It contains lots of fat, which freaks out many a vegetarian. But there is something about bacon that is just really delicious. What else can you say? It smells good. It's crispy. It's got that salty umami thing to it. Bacon is just really yummy. I think pork in general is, you know, the pig is an amazing animal, and almost every part of it is edible, and bacon somehow, I don't know, brings out the best in pork, I guess.
I'm going to tell you in all seriousness, and Francis doesn't know this, but last night I had a conversation in the bar of one of our two restaurants with a man who's Jewish and doesn't want to eat pork, but he said, I eat bacon. I have to eat bacon. I can't help it. It's, you know, I believe that I shouldn't eat pork, but uh-huh. I have to eat bacon. I cannot eat all other kinds of pork, but every once in a while I have
and
to.
We
give a little prayer every time.
I don't know how he internalizes yeah. his struggle.
And we all know.
But I do know that he eats bacon.
And we all know that turkey bacon is really just turkey.
Yes. No, the only bacon is bacon, and it's the one thing that these brilliant, you know, vegan meat makers out there cannot duplicate.
Do you know, I actually had a, you know, this is a very seminal issue, and if you think about it, it's about, you know, our relationship with death, and I think that death is a part of life, and it's about our relationship with the very sustenance that we have. And I remember I had a conversation a couple of years back with a person in a bar in New Brunswick who I met, who had converted to complete veganism. But she still had some leather shoes, and she was experimenting with plastic shoes. Some of them didn't work so well. But she said I said, well, what do you do with all your leather stuff? Do you throw it all away? And she said, well, no, because she didn't believe in using any animal like
right.
hide or skin or anything that required the death of an animal. And she said, you know, I have a few belts and stuff left, but when they're worn out, I bury them in the backyard and say a little prayer. And I thought, oh, my friend's over there. I've got to go. But, but I mean, it is about life and death, and the sacrifice of animals has always been a part of society.
We have relationships with these animals. Yeah. We have pets. We have relationships with animals throughout our lives.
One of the things you talk about is in the magazine is what's okay to be meat. I mean, in some cultures, you know, a dead dog is a dead dog in our culture. But you know, in some cases, in some cultures, a dead dog can become meat.
Yes.
In some cultures, horse meat is okay, but in other cultures, you would never think of eating, though it's nutritious and healthful, horse meat.
Right.
And it has more to do with just flavor. It has to do with the position of the animal in society. Why don't you talk to us about that?
Well, it's funny you should mention horses. That's sort of how I got involved in this project in a way. When Sasha approached me about doing this magazine, I was living in Slovenia where they eat horse meat all the time. And I was just so amazed by this because, you know, I got interested in why it is that they eat horse meat in Slovenia and don't in the States. And I started talking to people about it in America who are really opposed to it. And I was calling the Humane Society, who's one of the groups that really fights horse slaughterhouses and the whole industry here in the States. And I was saying, well, why horses and not cows? And they told me that horses, you know, they played an important role in American culture. You know, Paul Revere did not ride a cow on his midnight ride. You know, horses are part of the founding of the Republic. We owe them a debt of gratitude. And
that's the kookiest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Kookiest thing I've ever. And this
Teddy Roosevelt did not ride a deer.
Right, exactly. Therefore, eat all the deer you want. Yeah, I mean, this is a humane society. This is not some, you know, wacky little niche group. And I think, I don't know, what can I say? It really points to the whole sort of suspension of reason that we all go through every time we eat a bite of any kind of meat. I guess we sort of create these boundaries to what we will eat and what we won't eat, and somehow that helps us navigate the world. But when you look at it, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
I have to say, I mean, you've piqued my curiosity. Now, you've become a vegetarian, and you print a picture of a woman in a meat dress, okay, and then again the picture of that dress hanging and rotting.
Right behind her, yeah.
Does that gross you out?
Well, meat has always grossed me out. Even when I ate meat, it grossed me out, and now that I don't eat meat, and it still grosses me out. I think meat grosses, you know, unless you're a chef or a butcher or somebody who really handles meat all the time, I think meat is kind of gross. I mean, don't you guys find that to be true?
No.
No? Really not at all?
Sorry.
You know, the fat of a chicken and sort of the veins. And I'm one of these
not at all,
people.
But that's...
And, you know, Sasha is not squeamish at all, and that girl will eat anything that you put on her plate, and she's a real hero of mine for that.
I'll tell you, we showed this picture to a few different people, and the responses are very different. Some are, oh, that's gross, she's wearing a meat dress, and some are, oh, that girl's really cute.
You know, that picture bothered me less than others we've printed. I've sort of been surprised that that's the one that gets so much attention. And I don't really know why that is. But
for our listeners, basically it's a woman wearing a 50-pound dress of flank steak.
Yes, all sort of sewn together.
Mm-hmm.
And she is kind of cute. I agree. She's, you know, that's part of the picture is this beautiful woman wearing something kind of horrifying.
Yeah, that's kind of horrifying, I have to tell you. I think though that where the culture comes together over meat is obviously it's really a flashpoint, and what can be meat and what can't. I mean, obviously we look at it and we say, well, you know, to eat another human being would completely not be acceptable in Western culture. So maybe to eat, you know, when people talk about eating primates, that makes me a little squeamish. That crosses my food line.
Short people are okay, but tall people not so much.
The more the food starts to look like me, the less I'm okay with it, to be honest with you. But I mean, you deal with that a little bit in this issue as well. You want to talk to us about that?
Oh, you mean the story about the husband and wife who are talking?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, that was sort of Sasha and I, when we were doing the first issue, we got a bunch of pitches that were about cannibalism. And we said, okay, hold on. Cannibalism, we'll have to wait till issue 3. This is something we're going to give people a little time to get used to before we get into the cannibalism issue. But we decided to get into it in issue 2 instead.
Cannibalism. You're going to feature a whole issue on cannibalism.
I would love to do a whole issue on cannibalism. And in fact, there's an artist who we found out about who has been cutting pieces of herself, and I mean, who has been actually, you know, practicing cannibalism as part of an art project.
Oh, my God.
She's eaten pieces of her friends, and they've eaten pieces of her.
I think they should be put in a ward. I'm sorry.
So that crosses the line for most people, yeah. And I think the day we do the story about this artist is, you know, we'll see what that does to our subscriber list. But between this husband and wife couple, it was this question of, you know, if you were on a boat and the boat was running out of food and everyone drew straws and someone drew the short straw, would you eat your, you know, the love of your life, your partner? And that question, each person in this couple answered that question differently. One person said that he would and the other person said that she wouldn't. And that became emblematic to them of this whole, it was sort of the tip of the iceberg of all these kinds of philosophical.
And how long have they been divorced? do you feel bad about causing that divorce?
I do feel a little bad about it, but they're doing great. I think they found that this debate is something that, you know, gives a little spice to their marriage, maybe. But
well, and they never go anywhere in a boat together. Which is also
exactly. I think that was the moral of that story. Absolutely.
We're going to have to take a quick break. Amy, we'll be back in just a moment talking with Amy Stanton of the Meat Paper, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:47.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at vinfinitysystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, and they haven't thrown us off the air yet. So we're talking with Amy Stanton.
Station manager's been in to visit us since during the commercial break.
We're going to keep this one a little more tame.
We're
not going to talk about cannibalism at all. We're going to talk about the Meat Paper, the Journal of Meat Culture, which is a brand new sort of a literary magazine that's out there. Now, to be honest, this is a literary and artistic magazine more than it is about meat. I mean, am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
One of the things, though, that you have here, a different picture that is a beautiful picture, is of the Ponca Indian Scouts skinning a buffalo in Oklahoma.
Yes.
Which is, you got this picture from the Library of Congress. It's really fascinating, and this really speaks to a culture where the buffalo was all. I mean, killing this animal was what they needed to do to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is the commonality through all of the topics that talk about actually killing an animal and turning it into meat is to do it respectfully, you've pretty much got to use the whole animal.
Yep.
Will you talk to us about whole animal and how that appears in the different articles and the different people you've spoken to in the magazine?
Sure. Well, I'm glad. I mean, it's really interesting to start with that particular article because that's where we see that in the beginning, American meat was all about the whole animal. I mean, Native Americans, as Loretta Odin, who's this Native American chef, talks about in one of our issues, they really ate everything. They used every single part, you know, from the hooves to the hide to the stomach to the everything. And that, as we all know, tradition was lost when settlers came and essentially, you know, completely just decimated, wiped out the entire buffalo population.
Well, basically, historically, we would kill off the buffalo in order to win our battle with
the Indians.
Yes.
The Indians today.
Yeah.
It was
a contest. I mean, Buffalo Bill would brag that he killed about 4,000 buffalo, I think. I mean, you know, a lot of these people we think of as heroes were also...
I don't really...
Right. It would be okay if he killed 4,000 buffaloes and fed 400,000 people with it.
I think so. On the other hand, you know, there is the question of how much meat we eat. I mean, Native Americans didn't depend on meat as heavily on their diet as we do.
I think it's funny. I just want to interject one thing. I remember they recently introduced a controlled buffalo hunt back in Montana, and they talked about the buffalo hunting and hunting buffalo because there's no real, they were in herds that were so abundant, they have no real fear of humans and no fear of guns, and they don't run away. And someone characterized hunting buffalo as sort of like hunting a parked car. The great Buffalo Bill.
Oh, I don't know. That's so sad.
You stood there and you kill the thing that didn't run away from you.
Yeah, it's like it's not even fish in a barrel. It's
a
car. So. Yeah. But, well, I mean, so anyway, to get back to your original question, now what we're seeing is chefs who are rediscovering these traditions, and people like Chris Cosentino who are having these whole animal meals where you do eat every single part of the animal, and you can go to restaurants and eat testicles, as Sasha and I did recently before I became a vegetarian, and everything else. And I think that's great. I'm all for it. I mean, who wouldn't be, you know? The issue of waste is something that's becoming clearer to us all in an environmental sense, in a moral sense.
Is it okay with you if I still give certain parts to the dog? Is that all right with you?
As long as the dog eats it.
Your homework, both of you, is to go home, find some testicles, fry them up. They were pretty gross. Well, no, they weren't pretty gross. They were pretty good, but they were the idea of eating them was a hurdle for me to get over. That the grossness happened before you took a bite, and then it was fine.
Well, you know, you talk about in the article that you wrote about on the range. This is your article. Your interview with who's
Loretta Oden.
Loretta Oden. Yeah. She talks about how, you know, if you boil the tendons long enough, they become edible, and you braise and boil everything that's not immediately edible,
right.
And you make a cup or a scarf or a blanket or something
out of the rest,
edible.
Or a pouch. I mean, this is a woman who cooks beaver tail, you know. Keep that in mind. Her threshold for what's edible is pretty high.
Beaver tail's got to be
pretty
tough.
Pretty low, I should say. Beaver tail's got to be tough?
But she's a native. Writes about Native American cooking.
Mm-hmm. And this is what they did.
What she said was, you know, at the end of after they killed the buffalo and started to skin it, at the end of the day, all that was left was a spot on the prairie where it used
to
be.
Isn't that wonderful?
You know, which I think that's great. And I also think that is an intelligent way to eat meat and be in touch with meat. And I think you've got to savor the meat more. And you know what? I respect people who believe that we shouldn't eat meat and are honest about that opinion. But I think it all starts with an honest discussion of, number one, what it is to kill an animal for meat. And number two, you know, and I say this to the PETA people who will come out against one form of meat or another, pretending like they're not against meat in general. It's about having an honest conversation of, are you against the killing of animals because you think that's wrong under any circumstances? Or do you think it's okay under certain circumstances to kill animals for meat?
Yeah.
Or do you think that, listen, the heck with animals, they're little meat factories, and we can torture them all we want, and as long as we get cheap meat, it's fine.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to, but we have to be honest about what's actually going on out
there.
Right,
exactly. And I think, you know, moral consistency is a lot to ask for. I you know, challenge you to find one person, save maybe some monk sitting on a hill somewhere, who can live entirely consistently with all of his or her beliefs about how the world should be. It's just not possible. I think the issue is to do the best we can.
Well, I'm going to say we're going to have to leave it there. And for those of you who are listening, that monk will be on the show next week, and we'll be talking about with him some of these issues. Thanks so much for your magazine. Thanks for coming on the show, Amy.
Oh, and thanks for having me. It's been great talking
thanks,
to you.
Thanks, Amy.
It's called The Meat Paper, your journal of meat culture. You can find out more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:56. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys Market.
That's one of our more disgusting shows, I think. I think we definitely can say ew to that. But, you know, going into the show, I didn't know quite how disgusting it was going to get. But, you know, there's a newspaper here, and the first picture of note is a woman wearing a meat dress, and the second picture of note is that meat dress decaying on a mannequin.
But it looks like beef jerky. It doesn't look like disgusting decaying. There aren't, like, you know, things on it. It looks fine. But I have to say, I think this paper really has value. I think it's really... it talks about hunting. It talks about Native Americans. It talks about whole animal. It talks about vegetarians' views on meat. It's a thoughtful publication.
I think we hit on something during the conversation. We didn't really discuss it very much, but it's really a literary magazine.
Yeah,
it's really the idea is to be a literary magazine, and meat happens to be the center point. It happens to be the point from the jumping point, the talking point. But it's
no. I think as a literary vehicle, it's centered on meat as a vehicle for thought and art and you know, meat, death, life, sustenance. It's a pretty good jumping off point or a pretty good focal point. Anyway, I'm going to go have a salad for lunch. I hope you've
not me, but maybe chicken.
I hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Shaw.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.